This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Equity.
Welcome to Equity Mates, a podcast that explores what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us, welcome. My name is Bryce, and today we're looking at who's in and who's out of the latest ASX rebalance, unpacking the great supermarket debate, and checking in on what experts are saying about inflation and rates. To chat through it, as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
Bryce, I'm very good.
That's good.
I'm excited for this. Our voices have held up. We've just got to the end of recording the first of two audiobooks we're producing this year. So that's exciting. But that's not all that's exciting.
Okay.
We are going on the road. We're taking Ask an Advisor, our content series where we get some of Australia's best financial advisors in the room and we ask them your questions. We're taking that on the road so you can be in the room with them and ask them your questions direct.
That's it. Tickets are selling like NVIDIA stock. Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
All right. And so make sure you secure yours. Head to equitymates.com/events to grab a ticket. It's only a matter of weeks away. First one here in Sydney, but as Ren said, hoping to get to some other cities around Australia across the year. We're super pumped. Grab your tickets now.
Yeah.
So some quick news to cover before we do get into the ASX rebalance.
Oh, no, dude, you skipped something.
Well, Ren, all you have written down here is Tassie Devils fun fact. So
yes.
What do you got?
So for the non-AFL fans amongst us, to bring you up to speed, the AFL has announced their 19th team, the Tasmania Devils. They already have more than 100,000 members. So what it took Collingwood 130 years to build, the Tassie Devils now the biggest team. The biggest team in the AFL by club membership.
Yeah.
But that's not the fun fact. So Warner Brothers has the copyright over the Tassie Devil because it's like one of their cartoon characters.
Yes.
And so the AFL had to negotiate with Warner Brothers to get the rights to use it.
No way.
And apparently they approached them and Warner Brothers weren't interested, but negotiations got a lot easier when the AFL explained to Warner Brothers that the Tasmanian Devil is actually an animal, like is a real thing.
Oh, actually?
Yeah.
Warner Brothers just thought it was some fictitious character.
They thought they had just made up some fictitious character back in the day.
Oh my goodness.
And it just struck me as the most American thing.
Oh,
like
so
some of your
insular.
Key IP, but you're so insular.
Love
anyway, that.
That
was
my
fun fact.
Nice. It is phenomenal how so many Tasmanians and I guess I would imagine people here on the mainland as well have jumped on to become founding members of that club.
Yeah.
Kicking off in 2028. I think they have something like over 120,000.
Yeah.
Now,
population of Tasmania is about 500,000.
Yeah.
So they're racking it up.
Yeah.
It helps. It helps that the membership is $10, or you can pay $15 if you want. I think you get more stickers in the $15 membership pack.
News and markets.
Some quick news, Ren. We've had some numbers that have come through just hours before getting into the studio that we want to touch on, that kind of paint a picture for what's going on here in Australia. Firstly, Australian migration numbers soared to a record 518,000. I think it was for last year.
Yeah. So the ABS have just reported this, biggest on record.
Yeah.
I mean, not surprising. We knew this was coming. But again, it just highlights we are having record levels of migration, which is important in one sense to fill up the post-COVID skills gap that we have. But it is harmful in another sense, I guess, in terms of just housing shortages are only going to get more acute.
Mm, mm.
Anyway.
It actually flows into the second number that came out today, which was the Australian jobless rate. It actually fell to 3.7% in February, down from 4.1% in Jan. I think the commentary around it, though, is they expect this migration influx from last year to push the number up a little bit over the coming years. Whilst the demand for jobs is still there, there's going to just be this mismatch between supply and demand.
My biggest takeaway from this is people who think an interest rate cut is coming sooner rather than later.
Mm.
These are signals that the economy is holding up okay.
Mm.
And it would just tell Michelle Bullock and the Reserve Bank,
there is
no need to cut soon.
Mm.
Like, there's no burning platform on which we're sitting. We're going to talk about interest rates and what what economists around the world think happens next in Australia and America a little bit later. So one final quick hitter, Reddit shares are going to start trading on Friday.
Love it.
Yeah. So by the time this is released, Reddit shares will be trading.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I was going to do closest to pin on whether it'll pop or not.
Oh, it'll pop.
Yeah. 25%?
I think they've already said the IPO is at the upper end of the range.
Valuation,
like, there has been interest.
Which was $5 billion?
Something like that, yeah. I'm going to say plus 15% day one.
Closing.
End of the week, flat. So it'll pop and then it'll fall.
Well, I'm going to have to say it'll finish the week down, but I reckon it'll be 20%+.
Initial pop?
Yeah.
And then it'll finish the week down?
Yeah.
Okay, that's aggressive.
All the banks will just sell out. See ya. Anyway, speaking of ups and downs, ins and outs, Ren, we've had a suggestion from a community member, Chris. He wanted to know what was going on with the ASX rebalance and have a bit of a chat about if it affects us as investors. So we thought we'd kick off the show with the ASX rebalance.
So for people who are unfamiliar with what it is, all of these stock market indexes, the ASX 200, the S&P 500, they track the biggest companies on the market. And every quarter, the index providers look at the market and say who's up, who's down, and then they remake their list.
Mm.
And so every quarter we have companies that have made it into the ASX 200, for example, and companies that have fallen out of the ASX 200.
How do you make it?
By being one of the 200 biggest companies.
Yeah, based on
that. It's competitive. It's like, you know, you've got
to... It's like the relegation zone in the EPL.
Exactly. And much like the relegation zone in the EPL, it is a lucrative thing
to
be in the top tier.
Definitely.
Especially the ASX 200. Because if you think about it, everyone who owns an ASX 200 ETF, at that quarterly rebalance, all of our money is sold out of the companies that have fallen out. They've been relegated. And all the companies that have been promoted into the 200, all these big ETF providers like Vanguard and iShares and BetaShares have to go and buy the companies that have just made it into the ASX 200. So let's focus on the ASX 200 because it's really the benchmark in Australia. We also have like companies made it into the ASX 20.
Mm.
Congratulations, QBE.
Yeah.
Not as exciting. So tell me about the 200.
So the 200, and this was kicked into effect as of the close of trade on the 18th of March. So this is now live. Just to put some context to this, the largest company in the ASX 200 is BHP with a $221 billion market cap. The smallest company is IPH, which is like an IP holdings company, I'm pretty sure, Australasia. It only has a market cap of $1.5 billion. So that gives you an idea of the spread between market caps between the number one and the 200th company. And there are a huge amount of companies fighting for that sort of $1.5 billion mark. So who's made it in? Who's sitting there going, great, we're in the top 200? The first one is Audinate. AD8 is the ticker, a company that we've heard a fair bit about over our journey at Equity Mates. They specialize in developing technologies for AV networking. I think one of their main products is sending video and audio through Ethernet cables. It's called Dante or something like that. It's up 158% over the last 12 months, so has been gaining market cap and is now in the top 200. The second is a company called Red 5. They're an Australian gold producer. They're up 140% the last 12 months. SiteMinder is another one, up 75% the last 12 months. They're a huge commerce platform for hotels, helping with everything from distribution, marketing, bookings, just really help hotels drive revenue, I guess. And then finally, Stanmore Resources. They're flat, but they had risen sort of 70% from their low, have cooled off a bit this year, but they're in the 200. They're a resources company.
Coal. So we've got a tech company in Audinate. We've got two tech companies with SiteMinder as well, and then two mining companies, gold and coal.
Yes.
Now, Audinate, we spoke, it's one of my biggest regrets. When we were doing our daily TV show back in the day, we spoke about Audinate all the time.
All the time.
Never bought it.
Damn it, yeah.
And then SiteMinder, we've also spoken a lot about, especially with Paul Wilson from Baylador. I own Baylador, so I guess I've ridden some of this SiteMinder ride, but not a heap. Another one where it was like, if we just listened to what we spoke about on the show a bit more.
No comment.
All right, so for every company that is celebrating, there is a company that is lamenting their fortunes.
Yes, there are. So we've had those that have been chopped from the 200, Chalice Mining down 82% in the last 12 months. Oof. They're involved in nickel, copper and gold. Core Lithium gone, down 80% last 12 months. Obviously, it's in the name, they're involved in lithium. Sayona Mining as well, they're involved in lithium, down 81% last 2 months.
Sayonara Mining.
Sayonara Mining. Ciao. And Weebit Nano out, down 47% last 12 months. They develop RAM technology for the semiconductor industry. Gone.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. So these companies are all in that relegation zone. A lot of the ones that are in are really sitting around that $1.5, $1.8 billion market cap. The name of the game from this point is to try and sustain that growth.
Yep.
So you stay in the top 200 and keep climbing because, as you said, Ren, it is very rewarding for all investors if you can get in that top 200.
Yeah, it is. All right, Bryce. Well, this is going to potentially be a fiery segment, especially from you, I'm thinking.
Okay.
This might be the segment that you get us cancelled.
Great. Any PR is good PR.
We wanted to touch on the great supermarket debate.
Uh-huh.
Now, Coles and Woolworths, together, they own about 60, 65% of the Australian grocery retail landscape. They are the duopoly.
Yeah, a fair ownership.
Oh, here we go. And the reason, they've been obviously in the news about their margins. Brad Banducci spat the dummy and then quit his job. But the inquiries are about to start. And what surprised me was the sheer number of inquiries into these two supermarket giants. So, you ready?
I am ready.
Firstly, there is an ACCC inquiry into supermarket practices. Secondly, a Greens-led federal Senate inquiry into supermarket practices. Thirdly, a Craig Emerson-led review of the Food and Grocery Code of Conduct. Four, a federal competition policy review led by Kerry Schott. Five, another Greens-initiated Victorian parliamentary inquiry into food security. Six, would you believe it, a Greens-led South Australian parliamentary inquiry into grocery pricing. Seven, a Labor-led federal inquiry into economic dynamism and competition. And you know the competition's going to focus on the supermarkets. Number eight, a Liberal-led Senate inquiry on cost of living. Again, you know it's going to focus on the supermarkets. And then finally, number nine, a Queensland government-backed inquiry into supermarket pricing.
Guys.
So my first question, Bryce.
Inefficiencies in government. Come together.
Do we have enough inquiries?
Come together. The amount of taxpayer money being wasted on this. Guys.
Well, some say wasted. This some say...
I saw in the paper the other day about the lawyers that these supermarkets bring in to defend all of this stuff and essentially continuously beat the ACCC is what I took out of it. So one of the KC's now acting for, I think, Google or Meta in this whole...
Different... We're talking about the supermarkets.
Yeah, I know, but it's okay. one of the lawyers that these guys used to bring in is on like 30 grand a day.
It's
ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah. This is the episode where Bryce discovered high
barristers.
Lawyers make a lot of money.
Anyway, sorry, derailing.
But I think that's a good segue because what I saw in the paper and what I thought was quite interesting is it's not just lawyers that make a mozza from these inquiries. It's also ex-political staffers because a lot of them then go to either lobbying firms or go in-house at a lot of these big companies. And I saw that Woolworths has got a let's say, a strategic hire to help them through this period. They've hired Anthony Albanese's former chief of staff.
Wow.
He was Albo's chief of staff during the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd years when they were in power. And now he's gone to Woolies to help them through this period.
Yeah, he's just consulting.
He's just picking up the phone and calling his mate.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, the world of ex-political staffers and where they end up. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the business side of it. Yeah, because, I mean, look, Australian supermarkets do have the best margins in the world.
Mm.
There's no denying it. We pulled these numbers
for retailers.
Oh, yeah, sorry, for retailers, for very low-margin grocery retailers. Yeah, that is an important clarification. These numbers came from the AFR, so EBIT, earnings before interest and tax. In the 6 months to December, Woolies, 6.1%, Coles, 4.8%. Company for the people.
For shareholders.
Woolies on food sales, 6.1%, Coles, 4.8%. In comparison, from the AFR, in the UK, Tesco and Sainsbury's struggle to crack 3%. France's Carrefour? Yeah, is at 2%. Kroger in the US, mid-3s. Walmart, around 5%. So, yeah, you know.
Walmart higher than Coles. What's everyone complaining about? Anyway, I shouldn't be laughing about this. It is somewhat of a serious matter.
It's very serious.
Yeah.
I mean, whichever.
It's not going to change.
No. There's pushes to give the ACCC powers to break up the duopoly.
But, like, what would that actually mean, though? Like, you split Metro from.
No, it would just.
Like,
well,
get rid of the e-commerce business, sell off, like.
Or it could be like what.
It's not going to allow a third party to come in and build 800 competing retail stores around Australia. Like,
what it could be is more what the supermarket landscape looked like in the 80s, which was a lot more state-based.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like Woolies bought Franklin's to get like a big presence in, I think, New South Wales. Yeah. And then Coles was like stronger in Vic and didn't have a lot of presence in other states. And there's been a lot of consolidation in the supermarket sector.
Yeah, it's a challenge that I don't know if all of these nine inquiries that you read out above, like what it's going to amount to, but yeah.
So not everyone believes that the supermarkets should be the focus of all of this. You're not alone on an island. Okay. And I actually wanted to, I thought you would be more critical of the supermarket, so I wanted to bring these to you and get your reaction.
Okay.
But I feel like you're just going to agree with them. So John Keogh, the AFR economics editor, said, supermarkets are not profit gouging. Less than $3 of every $100 spent goes to profit, which is fair.
Yeah.
Ben Gilbert, the head of equity research at Jarden, he believes that higher margins are justified by Australian supermarkets' lower return on invested capital. Now, due to the nature of Australia, and in particular our geography, we are just an expensive market to operate in relative to the UK and France and even America. On Ben's numbers, Australian supermarkets spend 3.3% of their sales on capital expenditure, while offshore supermarkets spend between 1.8% and 2.7%. And the more like you have to spend each year to sustain your business and sustain your sales, investors want to see a return on that. Mm. And so, you know, Ben's saying that the higher margins are justified by the lower return on invested capital and the higher capital intensity of these Australian supermarkets.
Mm.
Do you think that argument is going to wash?
No. I think a lot of what the supermarkets say is going to be argued through all of these. I think genuinely, from my point of view, the supermarkets do have a leg to stand on. Like they're not in most part just price gouging and those sorts of things. There's probably a handful of instances you could point to where there's been inappropriate behavior in buying teams or those sorts of things. But like by and large, just looking at the numbers, like they're not swimming in profit.
Yeah. I think Coles's gross margin went from like 24% pre-COVID to like 26% post-COVID. I read that somewhere. So like, you know, there's been a slight uptick, but that's not what people are reacting to. People are reacting to the high cost of groceries. Mm. And at the same time, on the other side, the supply, like smaller suppliers are feeling that they're being screwed.
Mm.
And so like the only answer is, well, who's in the middle of that transaction?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. The numbers don't really bear it out, but it's not going to stop.
It's not going to stop. It's not going to stop.
So one final piece of information I wanted to bring to the table. Speaking of suppliers feeling like they're being squeezed, Fraser forwarded us an email to ask@equitymates.com, which I thought was really interesting. And I feel like this is kind of, this will be the direction where all these inquiries end. This is my bold prediction, or not so bold prediction. I'm going to say the government are going to feel like they have to do something. There's too much political heat to do nothing. The more extreme measures, nationalise the food supply chain or break up Coles and Woolies, I don't think they're going to fly.
No.
And I feel like the middle ground is going to be some extra powers or some pressure on like areas of business practice and business operations. And one where suppliers always push quite hard is payment terms.
Yes.
And essentially Coles and Woolworths can operate with negative working capital. Like if you think of how normal business works, you buy something from a supplier and then you sell it to your customer. And so you need working capital to, when you buy it from a supplier before you sell it to a customer. Whereas a lot of what Coles and Woolies have are longer payment terms, you know, maybe, I don't know, 30, 60 day payment terms. I actually don't know how long the average payment terms are, but they're long enough that oftentimes Coles will be able to move that product through their network, sell it to the retail customer before they have to pay the supplier.
Mm.
And that means suppliers have to wait a long time to get paid, but they have to pay their workers.
Yeah, they need the cash.
Pick the fruit or man the manufacturing facility. You know, that's going to come up, and there'll be a lot of stories from suppliers that I think pick up in the news.
As in, long and the short of it, put a bit more pressure or rigor or legislation or some frameworks around making sure that these big businesses pay when they should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this analysis reckons, and we haven't run the numbers, we're just reading it, so they believe that if Coles agreed to pay suppliers on a seven-day payments terms basis, it would cost them an additional $410 million a year if they needed to borrow that money at 8%. And that would reduce their net profit before tax from about $1.5 billion to about $1 billion. For Woolies, the estimate is it would, if they were borrowing the additional money they needed for that working capital at 8%, it would cost them an additional $540 million, which would reduce their profit to just below $2 billion. What do you think about that?
I mean, I actually don't mind this idea.
Yeah.
As a small business owner, cash flow is king.
Yeah.
And yeah, it'll hurt them, but like I've also been on the other end of this where, you know, we've been buying equipment and all that sort of stuff through Woolies, and it genuinely does make an impact to these small suppliers, regardless of if it's fresh fruit or whatever, like, you know, it will make a difference. Mm. So
now we can't, we're not going to sit here and read out through all the maths, but what we will do is we'll share this article in the Facebook discussion group if people want to read the whole thing. So
nice.
Head over there. The link will be in the show notes.
Love it. All right. Well, we're going to take a very quick break, and then on the other side, we're going to have a look at what the experts are saying about inflation and where interest rates go next. We'll be right back.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to Equity Mates. So Ren, inflation and interest rates are still, I wouldn't say dominating headlines, but they're still obviously making headlines.
Yeah, far less headlines when nothing's happening.
Yeah, yes.
We're going to just keep things on hold and we think they'll stay on hold for a while. Not as rage baity as another rise.
Yes. So we're going to have a look at what some of the experts are saying about interest rates and about inflation, and particularly where interest rates are going to go over the next 12 months here in Australia, America, the UK and Japan. So let's start here in Australia, where the interest rate is currently 4.35%. It was paused at the latest RBA meeting, and the inflation rate as of January is 3.4%.
So close.
So close, yes. Close. For those that have just joined us, welcome. When we say so close, the RBA set their band for target inflation to between 2 and 3%. So 3.4%, we are almost there. Data is showing that the economy, though, is slowing down. GDP growth was slow in December. The jobs market is resilient, as we spoke about. Slightly higher wages growth and inflation is chilling out a bit, although the services sector is still very sticky, and that's the hard part.
Like wage growth in the services?
So they say services, the easiest way to think about it is everything that is like an experience, nothing that's like tangible.
Yeah,
everything from rent, blah, 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 blah.
No, I understand what services are.
Oh, I'm just telling people that don't know.
Okay. But when you say it's still very sticky, or you mean like people are still spending in that sector?
Okay,
so we found a poll from Reuters. They polled 40 economists between the 11th and the 14th of March. So the important thing about that date is it's before the latest RBA meeting was held. All 40 economists predicted the RBA would hold at that meeting. So all 40 were correct because they did. But here's what they're predicting from there. No economist of that 40 predicted the next move would be up. They all think the next move is going to be down. Michelle Bullock has said something quite similar at her press conference. You were very excited about the fact Michelle Bullock's doing press conferences.
Hell yeah.
Balance of probabilities, we're going down, we're not going up.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's good for a lot of people, for homeowners and everyone else. But then the question is, when are we going to go down? So views from these 40 economists were divided, with no majority for any one meeting. The strongest minority was around November. Now, that's important because that's different to what the market thinks. Interest rate futures are pricing in a 25 basis point cut by the end of September. So the market thinks we'll see a cut before these economists do. Now, specifically from the poll, 13 thought November would be the cut, 2 June, 8 August, 4 September, 5 said February 2025. So there's a meaningful number of economists that think no cuts in this year and it'll be next year. A slight majority thinks we'll see 2 cuts by the end of the year, 22 out of 40. Another 12 thinks just 1 cut. And the remaining 6 said rates would stay on hold for the rest of the year. And then there would be a cut next year.
And Bryce's bold prediction that we'll actually see a rise this year.
Oh, did you make that prediction?
Yeah.
Well, how are you feeling about that?
It's possible. It's possible. They'll get to the last mile in a moment. Let's have a look at what's going on in America.
So before you do, I just want to make one note from that last stat there. None of the 40 economists thought more than 2.
Mm.
22 thought 2, 12 thought 1, 6 thought none. So just when you're thinking about where the world is going to go, some people at one stage were saying 6 rate cuts this year.
It's always good to look at these and look in at previous predictions often these guys, they don't get it
that's
right.
That's a pretty good segment
they
idea.
Don't get it
that's
right.
We could just drag random predictions from years past.
Wrong. Anyway, let's move to America, where the interest rate is 5.33%, so almost a full percent higher than here in Australia. The inflation rate is 3.2%. It's actually up slightly from the 3.1% in Jan, but yeah, very close to the band that the Fed sets as well, between that 2 and 3%.
The FT, Financial Times, and Chicago Booth School, the business school in Chicago, they do a poll of academic economists similar to the Reuters one we were just talking about for Australia. So in this FT Chicago Booth poll, more than 2/3 of the economists surveyed think the Fed will make 2 or fewer cuts this year as it struggles, as you mentioned earlier, to complete the last mile of its battle with inflation. So just like to pause there, 2 or fewer both in Australia and in America seems to be more and more the economic consensus.
Pretty sure the markets at the start of the year priced in 6 rate cuts in the US.
I literally said that 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy how quickly expectations have changed. And this is what we were saying last year, that inflation is going to be a little bit harder to moderate, that last little bit.
I just think it's ridiculous that they priced in 6 where the Fed themselves said, like, it's going to be up to 3.
Oh, you think it's ridiculous that the market is overly optimistic?
Yes.
We've been doing this for 7 years now. I think that's something that you've got to learn.
Finally figuring it out.
A lot of investors live on hopium.
Yes.
All right, a couple more points from this FT Chicago Booth survey. So the most popular response from the economists over in the States is that the timing for the first cut in the US will be between July and September. So that's going to be earlier than what is predicted in Australia. So that's interesting. I believe it's interesting. And again, much like what we see in Australia, we see in America, financial markets think that cut will happen sooner than academic economists. Financial markets think the first cut will happen in June or July, whereas the economists were saying between July and September. And investors in the markets also think 3 rate cuts will happen this year, whereas, as we said earlier, these academic economists don't think there'll be more than 2. So if you feel like the market is in some ways getting ahead of the economy, I mean, this is why, because the expectations are different.
I think overnight the Fed released their voting, you know, how like there's 19 on the board or whatever, and they all kind of put a dot point where they think when the rates will start changing. 9 of 19 are still suggesting that it's going to be cut from mid-year, but that's down now. I think there was a majority. So, yeah, even the Fed are starting to cool their jets a bit. I just want to quickly touch on the last mile. If you've been reading the headlines, you may have seen this pop up a little bit. It refers to this period that these central banks are in where they're so close to their target band. You may think that, if we've brought it down from 9% to 3.2%, it must be easy to get into that band. But this is the hardest part because we're now facing the most difficult, challenging parts of the inflationary environment, those parts that are, regardless of what you do with interest rates, they're very sticky. And as we said, housing, for example, is one that continues just to be inflationary, services, wage growth. So we are close, but it is a bit of a battle.
I imagine services is a lot harder as well because, like, it's so tied to labor. Like, if you think about what you're paying for with services, like, the majority of that money is labor. Whereas with goods, it's things that, you know, maybe are a little bit more economically sensitive. You know, like, we've seen rates of shipping come well down and stuff like that. Fuel and manufacturing and all that stuff. Whereas services is literally like, I'm paying someone to do something.
Tough.
Yeah, so hard to convince people to do the same thing for less money
when
the unemployment rate is
so low.
Low and ticking lower.
Absolutely. Yeah. So just to close out, over in the UK, interest rate is 5.25% and inflation is now 3.4%. That's the lowest pace of inflation since 2021. They were battling there for a moment, one of the highest in developed countries. So good to see that's back down. And Japan, their interest rate is now 0 to 0.1%. Yes, you heard me right. The inflation rate is 2.2%, so nicely in that band. But why are we talking about this? This is the first time that they've raised interest rates in 17 years. It was actually a negative interest rate before they raised it to zero.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exciting. I just want to go back to the UK and just make a note. There's a real double-edged sword here because for all of the excitement that they're getting it back into the target band, it's also the UK economy doesn't look great.
Yeah.
And so falling inflation is great until it's terrible.
Yeah,
then it's a sign that your economy is not doing well.
Yeah.
But anyway, Japan, on the other hand, really exciting because, yeah, negative interest rates.
They've wanted inflation.
They've been battling
with...
The Bank of Japan owns like 70% of Japan's ETF market and because they've been trying to stimulate so much. They've got nothing left to buy.
Yeah, I think they've released... And I think they've pulled back on that buying now as well. So, yeah, good to see. But, yeah, first time in 17 years.
Yeah. So I think that brings us to the end of a pretty jam-packed episode. There's so much going on. We'll obviously be watching the ASX rebalance and what happens in a quarter. We'll be watching these supermarkets if Bryce doesn't get us cancelled first.
Love it.
And obviously inflation and interest rates is going to be a big focus. So join the conversation in the Facebook discussion group. Join the conversation live at our Ask an Advisor event.
We'll pick it up next episode.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.